So the book review assignment, I had a peek a couple times over the week. I see there is, if we can go to the table here. So there's a choice of three books which are eligible to be reviewed for the book review assignment. And I think I can pretty well rank them in terms of difficulty. Eduardo Galeano is a very famous writer in Latin America. This is a translation out of Spanish. Actually, he wrote this Salvador Allende was elected as the president of Chile. Allende was a socialist. He moved to nationalize the big American copper companies in Chile, which were a big part of the economy. He was killed. He was murdered in a U.S.-backed coup. That's one of the things that Christopher Hitchens writes about in the trial of Henry Kissinger. Christopher Hitchens was largely a left-leaning journalist, and then he shifted and he became a big supporter of the invasion of Iraq. You've probably seen him on television. He's a kind of pundit. But in one of the things he writes about and documents is the fact that the United States government and Henry Kissinger in particular has his fingerprints all over the coup in Chile that led to the installation of Pinochet. And Pinochet, like in many places, is a military dictator. This is a common feature of U.S.-backed coups. In Congo, for instance, you had a young left-leaning leader, Patrice Lumumba, who was the leader of the decolonization movement and was seeking to nationalize certain industries in the Congo, which is very rich in natural resources. It's now well documented that his being taken from office and murdered had the backing of the French, the British, the Americans. And in place, you got Mobutu, a general. Sese Seko, he called himself, the noble warrior. And he changed the name of Congo to Zaire to give it an indigenous name. But he was a ruthless dictator who dealt with his opponents by incarcerating them and murdering them. Eduardo Galeano writes this book just after the coup in Chile. And so he's responding to that event. And he's trying to tell the history of Latin America in a way to inspire the people to stand up against their oppressors. And he's writing about the history of Latin America as one which begins with the pillage of the Indian societies, and it never lets up. It's one empire after the next that keeps exploiting the natural resources and taking the wealth, exporting the wealth, and working with a group of collaborators with the outside governments. It's interesting that, Latin America, there were revolutions in the 1820s and just before the 1820s. Simon Bolivar is the famous individual in those revolutions. But did those revolutions really bring liberation and independence and self-determination to Latin America, or did they set up a new elite, an indigenous elite, who was in a way representing other powers, the British. The British made fortunes in Latin America. Were the British, in a sense, training the Americans as early as 1823 in the Monroe Doctrine? James Monroe, President of the United States, affirmed there will be no more colonizing of the Western Hemisphere by European powers. In other words, the indigenous people, whatever their ancestry in Latin America, will not be able to choose their own set of international relations. The one part of North America where the United States couldn't do that was in northern North America. Why? Because this was the British Empire. The British Empire was the most powerful polity on earth in the 19th century. So Canada's independence, whatever sovereignty we have, is, you know, rooted in the fact that the United States was never able to absorb Canada because it was the British that prevented them from doing so. So I would say this book is probably the shortest, it's probably the cheapest. There would be, you know, all kinds of enticements to this book, which I'm telling you about. Now, all these works deal with long periods of time. So 5 centuries of the pillage of the continent. This course is called Globalization Since 1492. So this is written in a way where you're looking at long period of history, but it's not telling the story of the whole world. It's telling the story of one part of the world. And I would say the intermediate level, this is a very new book. Just came out in 2005, Dominion of War. I drew my attention because I just read Fred Anderson's book about the Seven Years' War. Big book about the Seven Years' War. And again, it deals with a long period of time, empire and liberty in North America. And I think, in a sense, it's looking at the deep historical roots of what we now call the War on Terror. And looking at, it's interesting for me to see the history before 1776. Described as leading up to the creation of the United States and the kind of philosophy that prevails in the United States or the kind of forces which converge in the creation of the United States and continue to be renewed in different contexts. How many of you know the phrase manifest destiny? You know, it's a big phrase in the writing of U.S. history. Manifest destiny is a sense that God has created a destiny for the United States. It's manifest in many ways. This goes back and back. I guess it could be associated with the founding of New England by Puritans who are Calvinists, who see in the Old Testament a sense that there is a people chosen by God, the Israelites, with a special mission, a special purpose, to create a new Jerusalem, a Canaan. This volume connects really old history or earlier history to what's going on now, although it's done in a subtle way. It covers 8 individuals. George Washington is one. Andrew Jackson is one. Ends with Powell. Powell, you know, part of the war cabinet of George Bush. There's Colin Powell and Donald Rumsfeld. Condoleezza Rice, who will... You know, wouldn't it be interesting if we see the next presidential election as a Hillary Clinton versus Condoleezza Rice, which I think is a distinct possibility. and who's this man? Vice President? Yeah, Cheney. And some think that this government, the real boss, the one who really has the understanding and the sense, the knowledge of the networks is Cheney. Bush is a much less educated, much more junior kind of person. Wolfowitz was actually a student of Leo Strauss, a professor at the University of Chicago. And Strauss has a tremendous influence on this cabinet. So of course, Colin Powell was sort of the odd man out. He was the moderate, and he's gone now. So the voice of moderation was taken out. Giovanni Arrighi, the long 20th century. Matt Sletto, when he saw I put this on, he said, "No, that's a bit too advanced for a second year course." I don't know. I'll draw to your attention that there is a certain complexity with this book. I found in this book essentially a history of capitalism, and he's making a mockery with the long 20th century. He's in fact going back, saying the 20th century, what's going on in the 20th century has deep, deep roots. It's essentially a history of capitalism, and he starts with an analysis of the northern Italian states, Genoa, Florence, Venice, and Milan, and the banking arrangements and the way that the traders who went on the Silk Road to China and traded in the Middle East financed different monarchs to do war, how that worked. And then he follows the trail to Netherlands, which of course revolts from the Spanish Empire. It's part of the Reformation. It's part of the Protestant trend of European history. Amsterdam becomes, in a way, the main global city. The Dutch East Indies Company becomes one of the most valuable companies that's traded on the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. Then comes, insurance and trading in futures and building of huge warehouses and buying things when they're cheap and warehousing them and selling them when they're more expensive. The Dutch tended to take over the Portuguese colonies in the Spice Islands. It was the tremendous profits that you could make bringing back pepper, cinnamon, nutmeg. These are items that are small. You can, if you have a large load of pepper, you can make huge fortune. You can make 10,000% on your investment. The Dutch were able to, New Netherlands, of course, becomes New York in 1664. The Netherlands, so that was one of their colonies in North America, New Netherlands, but then it's conquered in 1664 by the English and it's renamed New York. So he describes all of these developments in Amsterdam. Then Amsterdam sort of passes the torch to London, and London becomes the major global city. And the East India Company kind of duplicates the Dutch East India Company, and the East Indian Company eventually prevails in India. Government takes over in 1857. And then, of course, you follow the trail to New York. And I was reading this, and I've now submitted volume 2 to this project, The Bowl with One Spoon. As I was working on that and thinking about John Jacob Astor, the big fur trader in New York who made a fortune, followed the Lewis and Clark expedition and was able to export otter skins to China. Chinese didn't want anything from Europe. What could the Chinese get from Europe that they didn't make better of? Otter skins they wanted, and then of course the Opium Wars broke. That's the way Europe broke in. and it became increasingly powerful colonization. But as I was working on this, it occurred to me, well, isn't it interesting that New York represents a combination of the old global city, Amsterdam, and the new global city, London, you know, New Netherlands to New York. And so you get, you know, this marriage. And so this is the third volume here. So I guess that's basically the time is up, right? We're done just now, and I'll leave it at that.